When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. Shekhar Hislop, Stevie Nicol and myself, Kay Murray in the studio, and we will start tonight with the Europa League. Liverpool taking on Sparta Prague. It was a 5-1 win for Jurgen Klopp's men in an entertaining first leg round of 16 clash. Sparta Prague did have a few chances in this game, but a 6-minute penalty from Alexis McAllister got things underway. Then came two goals from Darwin Nunez to give Liverpool a 3-0 lead. A Conor Bradley own goal briefly made it 3-1 before Luis Diaz and Dominic Szoboszlai added to those goals. Konate came out injured, but we did see the return of Mo Salah from injury as well. We'll invite Frank Leboeuf in to talk more about what we've seen. But let me start with you, Stevie Nicol, because it was a strong team that Jurgen Klopp started for this game.
Yeah, it was a strongish side. I mean, they rode the lock. In the first half, they could have lost 3 or 4 goals. Mm. Now, the problem is that regardless of whether they had lost those goals or not, they always looked as though they had another gear. And even though they didn't change gears for the whole game, they still run out 5-1 winners. I mean, really, this was too easy. I mean, it really shouldn't be this easy at this stage of a European competition, in my opinion. But at the end of the day, you've got to perform, you've got to win the game, and you've got to beat who's in front of you. And they did it really comfortably, and they got some goals. And I guess more importantly, they got Szoboszlai and they got Salah on the field and got the blood pumping through their veins again, because there's no question if those two in particular have no problems after the short time they were on the field, they have to start against Man City.
How much of a lift is that then?
A huge. And listen, while I'm with Stevie and Liverpool made this look far too easy than it should, a week ago I had Slavia Prague in my top 10 after they got the better of Benfica in the previous round of this competition. So Prague come into this with some pedigree, but then I thought the big difference between the two teams and probably the telling difference between the two teams in the first half, because the game was all but over at half-time, was just the quality of play in the attacking third. Prague had the opportunities, but just could not finish. And then all of a sudden, you see the really good side to Darwin Nunez with his two goals and how wonderfully he took those. So for Liverpool, job very well done. The scoreline makes it look a whole lot easier than maybe you thought of in terms of the opposition. From a Jurgen Klopp perspective, and to your question, at this point we're not quite sure what's Liverpool's strongest team because they have so many injuries. And then you see Konate limp off. Post-game, he's saying that he felt that if he had committed to that sprint, it would have gone. So it makes perfect sense. Virgil van Dijk has to come on. I'm not sure whether he was ever going to get a run out or not, because he's just so important to their fortunes that you want to start bubble wrapping some of those key players. But no issues for van Dijk. Salah gets minutes. Szoboszlai again gets minutes and a goal. So all in all, a very good day for Jurgen Klopp.
Yeah, not good though when you did see that Konate moment. Obviously, we've heard afterwards from Klopp, as mentioned, that it was precautionary, but the player himself did say, if I do another sprint, it could be bad.
Yeah, that would be a worry.
Yeah.
Football players don't stop for no apparent reason. And he obviously felt something. And with such a big game coming up, with, 3 days to recover, I'm not so sure that you'd be particularly confident in Konate starting the game, quite frankly.
And that's the thing, see, you know, Jurgen Klopp is saying, yeah, he'll be fit and available for Sunday. But if you feel like you're one sprint away from it going, 3 days is not.
No.
In my experience, enough recovery time.
It's not an ideal situation, is it, Frank, given that it's Man City next?
Yeah, it's not. And it's a real concern. And that I'm with the guys, you know. He would never have stopped sprinting if he didn't feel anything. Therefore, he has something. That's the main concern that I have about Konate getting out. Yeah, it's maybe precautionary, as Klopp said, but he has something. How long is going to take for him to get back into it? I think he will need more than 3 days before the game starts against Manchester City. And it's a big blow for Liverpool again, because Konate is huge right now. He's very important. And it's again a big blow for Liverpool. And it's very sad for Konate, because I think he wants to go there. I think he was very clever to stop sprinting. But I'm sorry, I think it's too late. I'm very pessimistic about him starting the game against City.
So who plays next to Van Dijk?
Well, it's going to have to be Joe Gomez, probably, I would expect, because he's got more experience than Kwanzaa. But that's not good news. You know, Liverpool, in order to either get a result or to beat Manchester City, Liverpool have to be at the strongest defensively. And I'm sorry, but neither Gomez nor Kwanzaa are good enough yet to have Klopp thinking, that's fine, if Konate doesn't play, then I have no trouble playing one of those guys, because they don't have the experience, and Liverpool are going to need to... They're going to have to rely on everybody being at their very, very best. And I don't think Joe Gomez and Kwanzaa at their very, very best are capable of coping with somebody like Haaland.
One man who does seem to be at his very, very best at the moment is Darwin Nunez. I saw a stat during this game. He's been directly involved in 12 goals in 12 games for Liverpool in 2024, which is level with Kevin De Bruyne as the joint most of any Premier League player, Stevie.
Well, some questioned him. Some have been questioning him since he's come to Liverpool. But, you know, whichever way you want to look at it, whether it's through your own eyes or whether you want to look at stats, this guy has to be taken seriously. And this guy, every time he gets the ball, you sit on the edge of your seat. Because, yes, he's capable of missing, but he's also capable of doing what he did today. I mean, two incredible goals. The first one, the ball is moving all over the place. The goalkeeper has no chance. And again, that one, everything that Shaka talked about when we showed it the first time, he's gone away from goal. He doesn't have a lot to shoot at. There's only one place it can go. But boy, does he make it look easy. So, yeah, absolutely flying.
How do you defend...
Nobody wants to play against...
No, exactly. That's what I want to ask you guys. How do you defend a player like Darwin Nunez, Frank?
It's hard right now. It's very hard, almost impossible, because he's full of confidence about his own skill, and he can try anything and it works. I have to say that before maybe answering to your question, I'm very happy because he's been so much criticized, and many people wonder why he was signing for Liverpool, maybe not thinking that he has the level of talent that you need to play for that team. He is proving everybody's wrong, and I'm happy for him. Now I think he's not the fastest guy in the world. I think so you have to be close to him, and you have to anticipate all runs behind. And thereafter, on the two goals that he scored, I mean the second one, yeah, it's hard to score because it goes away, as Shaka explained. But if you are a little bit closer than him, if you anticipate, you can cut off the shot. On the first one, I have to say the goalkeeper, maybe Shaka has to say something about that. Maybe the goalkeeper is anticipating too much on the left side. But he tries because he trusts that he can do it. But it's not something you can cope with. It's mostly the goalkeeper who has to cope with. But right now, it's hard to deal with him because he can try whatever he wants. He feels that he can get it, and it's hard as a defender to cope with that.
You must be praying that your defenders do get it right, though, Shaka, in those situations.
Yeah, I wouldn't like to be standing for the first goal that Frank's referencing. I mean, you look at the movement he gets on the ball, and yes, players, I would complain about the movement on the ball because these new balls just move so much more than the ones that I'm used to. But he shapes to go to the goalkeeper's left, and just the ball just comes back so almost violently and is dipping every which way, you sympathise. But that's the kind of goal you've always associated with Darwin Nunez. That kind of brute strength, just hit through the middle of it, and good luck to you in trying to keep it out. The second is the ones that I find he's more frustrating with, where he just has to slow down a little bit more, take his time, and it's a whole lot more technique to it. Incredible execution this time around, but that hasn't always been the case, and that has been the root of the criticism around Darwin Nunez.
Obviously, as mentioned, the next game is against Manchester City. Mm. That's coming up on Sunday. Mo Salah coming back there from injury. Does he start this game?
Absolutely. Mm. Yeah, I mean, this is a game that Liverpool have to go and try and win. And if you have a fit Mo Salah, which clearly is, and there's no ill effects after today, then you have to play him. It's an absolute no-brainer, in my opinion. He has to play. And as far as Konate, if I can go back, I think we'll see what's going through Klopp's mind if Konate starts in this game. Because we always talk about, if somebody's got an injury and you're not quite sure, we always throw in, well, if it was a cup final, then you play them and you take the chance. Mm. It depends how Klopp sees this game. If Klopp sees this game as a must-win, then he'll start Konate and take the chance,
Is it a must-win?
No. I don't think it is. No, I don't think so.
Is it a must-not-lose?
I think preferably it's not-lose. If you're sitting top of the league and you have a points advantage and you don't lose to the team that's chasing you, OK, Arsenal are as well, then that's a result. So, yeah, it's about getting a result.
All right. Man City are favourites going into this game. You're not on tomorrow, Frank, so let's get your prediction now for Liverpool against Man City on Sunday.
Well, if it's not maybe a must-lose for Liverpool, I think it's a must-not-lose for City, for sure. If they lose, they will be 4 points behind Liverpool, and it's going to be tricky for them. But I see a draw. I see a draw because it's hard to see and to say right now what kind of mood City is going to be. And Liverpool, with all the injuries that they have, but at the same time with all the confidence and the trust they have in their football and the luck that they have, they can get something out of it. So saying that one of the teams is going to win is hard for me. So it's why I see a draw. Because first I want to see still a big race in the top of the league. And I think it's only fair to not see a loser in that game.
So we'll continue to preview the big game on Sunday in the coming editions of ESPN FC. So be sure to be with us Friday and Saturday ahead of that big one on Sunday. Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com. Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. This is some of the reactions to Real Madrid's 1-1 draw with Leipzig in the Champions League on Wednesday, which was enough to see them through. Marcus says, agonising. Diario As says, mission accomplished, suffering. So they did it, but they suffered to do so. Real Madrid coach Carlo Ancelotti was very critical about his side's performance. He said it was a bad with low intensity. The idea was to press more with energetic midfielders, but we played with the brakes on, no pressing, slow with the ball, not direct, with sideways passes. It wasn't a good night. Obviously, it's my fault. I might have been wrong with the starting 11. We must be self-critical and improve. The criticism today is totally deserved. His players pretty much echoed his sentiments as well, the likes of Tony Rudiger and Toni Kroos, who even went so far as to say on that performance they didn't even deserve to be going through to the next round. I mean, they are right though, aren't they, Stevie? Not the point that they didn't deserve to go through, but the point that it just was not what you'd expect from Real Madrid in a Champions League game.
No, it was not. And I think they've gone through more to do with Leipzig going forward not being at it, because they had opportunities. They had so many breaks, so many chances in the final third to create clear, open goal-scoring chances. And they failed to do so. With the amount of time that they were actually in that final third of Real Madrid, they really, really weren't at it. And that's the reason Real Madrid are through, because, as everybody has said, including the manager and the players, they just weren't themselves. But the most important thing is they've gotten away with it. And that's the key. When you're not at your best, regardless of the opposition, and you're giving up somewhat chances, and you're not keeping the ball as well as you... Just everything's not at it, but you get away with it. You're in the next round. That's the key.
And they obviously did all say at the end of those quotes, Shaka, but we did get through. Now, obviously, Carlo Ancelotti's taken the blame. Many managers do, but it is on the players too here.
Yeah, listen, I think, in all honesty, you should not have to motivate players for a Champions League game of this magnitude. Yeah. Especially when we're talking about Real Madrid and their history in the competition. At the Bernabeu, the fans understand what it means, so they've come to play their part. So I do not think that Ancelotti is to blame for that. But you look at this performance, and I am with everything that the Real Madrid players and Stevie just said. It just failed to live up. It failed to live up to any kind of expectation from them, as a home game, as a team in the ascendancy, given the confidence that they're playing with. And dare I say, I think they're a little bit lucky that Leipzig themselves had their handbrake half the way up, because to start the game, they seemed more concerned about conceding and going two behind and giving themselves that multi decline, because all of a sudden Real Madrid score, Leipzig themselves put their handbrake down, and they are the better of the two teams and deservedly get the equaliser, and it could have been so much more. And you understand their kind of their hesitancy, given the fact that yes, they come into the Bernabeu, they're their away team. You don't want to leave yourself open, and Real Madrid, as much as anybody, could beat you on your day. Well, Real Madrid at their best. This version of Real Madrid couldn't. And it's a little bit disappointing from a Leipzig perspective that they didn't recognise that sooner, because I think had they could have won this game.
Frank?
Yeah, I'm with the guys who say, you know, sometimes you're not good and the best is just to go through and forget about it, or maybe use it as a bad experience and how to not do it again. I think it's nice from Ancelotti to get the blame, but I'm with Xhaka. I think he's the last to be blamed, and the players in the Champions League game don't need the coach to motivate them. I feel some sympathy about Openda, the Leipzig striker. I mean, I saw him playing for Lens, and I think he has a beautiful, fantastic season with Leipzig. But yesterday, he could have turned his career. He could have scored like 2, 3, 4 goals and become somebody, an attraction. And he missed that. I think he didn't sleep well. He's a talented player, but he could have done something absolutely fantastic and smashing, you know, on his own Real Madrid. But Real Madrid has to, rethink about that game and do it better. But have you seen the talent of that team? I have no problem whatsoever to see that we won't see that twice. It's impossible. Ancelotti won't allow it, and most of the players won't accept it.
Well, that leads us perfectly to where we need to go next, because they are second favourites when it comes to the Champions League behind Manchester City. For you, Stevie, right now, where do you rank Real Madrid in terms of favourites to win the Champions League?
I would put them behind Arsenal and Manchester City. You know, I think, you know, look at... We put their team up a minute ago. And when you look at the front six, you look at it and you go, poor, that's a good side. I'll tell you what, you look at the back four and the goalkeeper, you go, hold on a second, are they good enough? I mean, seriously, look at that team. Camavinga, Cruz and... Too many. I mean, you've got the legs and and all that from Camavinga and Tchouaméni. You got the brains from Cruz. You got the quality of Vinny and Bellingham and Valverde. I mean, going forward, I don't want too much to do with that. I'll tell you what though, when you get into that back line though, yes please. I mean, Mendy's not a great defender. Nacho for me is not a good centre back. You know, Rudiger, as good as he can be, sometimes he's a little scary. You know, he dives in on too many occasions for me. And Carvajal's a decent fullback, and Lunin is an okay goalie. So, looking at that back line, does that suggest that they should be second favourites for the Champions League? I don't think so.
Frank, PSG or Real Madrid?
Oh, no, Real Madrid, much better, I think. And we talked about Real Madrid, and we've been talking about their defence for like 2 months, and I think it was like a month ago that they had a big game, and we say, wow, with that defence, how are they going to handle that? And they kept the clean sheet, and we say, we clean sheet, and we say, how is possible, you know, with that defence, that they do that well? They didn't do well against Leipzig, and they are lucky, but it works. It works, and there is no other options. The goalkeeper, Courtois, is not there. Most of the defenders are injured as well. And they're doing like that. Ancelotti is working with that. And it works. So far, so good. One day, maybe it won't, but they're still one of the favorites. For me, City is above everybody. But again, you have question marks about City this season. I think it's a very strange Champions League this season because you don't really know who the favorite is and who the contender is. Because we don't talk about Inter. Inter was in the final last season and they are fifth in the odds. But why don't we make them the favorites? I think they aren't they at the top of the Calcio, the Serie A? So you know what? People, we are talking about the obvious, City, Real Madrid, Bayern Munich. But Bayern Munich, well, before the last game, they weren't there. City, they had some problems. Real Madrid, they have problems. Arsenal, we don't know with the kind of inexperienced players. Why don't we talk about Inter?
I guess, Frank, my point would be, you know, we're talking about Openda having three and four chances, and he absolutely had at least two that he should have scored, and he could have done better with the other two. We're talking about Openda, with all due respect.
But that's Leipzig.
And we're not talking about Haaland or Mbappe or Saka or Martinelli or Lautaro Martinez. You know, we're not talking about... Are you telling me that those guys I've just mentioned, if they're in the same position as Openda, we're talking about a different outcome? That's why I don't believe they should be second
right. With that in mind, then, I just gave him PSG Real Madrid. If I were to give you Arsenal or Real Madrid, Shaka, to back to win the Champions League, and it was only going to be one of them, who would you go for right now?
Right now, I'd go for Real Madrid. And saying that, I said on the show a couple of days ago, I think Arsenal are arguably playing the best football, at the very least in England. You could make that argument about European football. And everybody has their flaws. And while I'm with everybody in thinking City are the best in the competition right now, City can't keep a clean sheet for love nor money. My thing with Arsenal, I'm going to steal Frank's thunder here. Frank always makes the point, and I fully agree with him on this, is you have to hit the post before it goes in. You saw City losing a Champions League final before they win it. You saw Liverpool recently losing a Champions League final before they go on to win it. You see that happening time and time again. And while right now Arsenal, I think, in terms of their play from back to front, in terms of their balance, in terms of even players that Arteta can call on, you can make the argument that Arsenal are better than Real Madrid. No question. Two things. You have to hit the post before it goes in. And as Real Madrid just seems to show, season in, season out, especially when it comes to the Champions League, they're greater than the sum of its parts. And so if you had to give me one of the two right now, I'd go Real Madrid.
Let's get to a key moment in that game. One of the most controversial moments was Vinny Jr. with the yellow card in the 54th minute when he pushes Willy Orban with both hands around his neck. Could have been a red. The player himself said, unfortunately, referees don't have the guts to send off players like that. They can give a red card. He grabs my neck with both hands. That's simply disrespectful. Benjamin Henrik said, Had it happened the other way around and one of our players went for the neck of a Real Madrid player, then he would be sent off 100%. And maybe the funniest of the quotes is David Rahm, who says, even when he got booked, he should have already been off the pitch because he had a few tackles. The referee talked a little bit differently to us than the Real Madrid players. I don't know why. We were also nice, funny guys. Should Vinny have been sent off, Frank?
Yes, I think so. I think he really deserved something, you know, pushing the players at the, on his back at first. And then, yeah, he grabbed his neck. And we saw so many times that it's something you cannot do that and you cannot do. And yeah, he looks for him, he pushes him. Yeah, I think the defender exaggerates the move. But yeah, you see, it's already a yellow card now because he pushes, pretending he doesn't. Then look for the guy and push him again. So yeah, and on the neck, and it's a bad conduct. I don't know, it's at least a yellow card, but it could be, it should be for me, a red card.
I thought there were two individual yellow cards. Watching the game, I thought the shoulder into the back was a yellow, and then I thought the push. Yes, he does catch the player on the neck, I didn't see that as being a red. I thought it was a push, but I thought it was a yellow. So the referee has this decision to make, and we see this happen, and referees really ever adjudicated in this manner that it's two yellows back-to-back within 3 seconds of each other. You don't often see referees give that. But I don't think either of them taken on their own are a direct red either.
When it comes to the Leipzig players' comments about had it been the other way around, what do you think, Steve?
Oh, he's right. Absolutely. 100% right. Yeah. And it should be a red card. Listen, if I'm Vinny's coach and he gets a red card, there's one thing I'm not doing. I'm not coming out in the press and defending him. You can't defend that. You put your hands on the opposition's neck, you're off the park. So the only conclusion you can come to is because it's Vinny Jr. and it's Real Madrid. Because there's no other way of going to that. If you're sat in the VAR booth and you look at that again and you don't come up with either two yellows if you want to be really nice, but it's a red anyway, if you don't come up with that, you're probably thinking about who the player is and what the team is, no question.
Frank, you had a little chuckle there when I asked if it had been the other way around.
Yeah, no, because it's true. I think it would have happened to Openda and getting Rüdiger's neck. I can tell you, it's a straight red card. I can bet on it. Yep. I'm sure. And we all been there. You know, I remember barely touching George Weah, my teammates after at Chelsea, but we played in Parc des Princes and Paris Saint-Germain were the big Paris Saint-Germain, and I barely touched him and the referee gave a penalty. And I said halftime, I said, do you really think that he need that? And the referee even was laughing because George Weah say sorry to me. But it is what it is, and we all know that. We all know that big clubs, big players, and big teams, they have that with referees. It's unfair, but it is what it is.
All right. I did want to show you a couple of previous incidents where there has been inconsistencies with this. You'll remember Casemiro and Will Hughes last season at Manchester United against Crystal Palace. That was a 3-game suspension for violent conduct for two hands around the neck there. Obviously, a red card. And then last season in the Merseyside derby, just after that, Connor Cody, in a scuffle with Andy Robertson, grabs him by the neck and pushes him away. As mentioned, it came after the Casemiro incident. There was no punishment at all here. And so what we are seeing is some inconsistent refereeing across the board, Stevie,
fancy
on
that.
Some situations like this.
Well, that's a new thing, isn't it?
What should the law be?
Well, I don't know what the law is, but I think if you ask any football player, what do you think would happen if either you or somebody else put their hands on your neck? I think we'd all agree that it would be a red card. Mm. So there has to be, other than referees being biased or influence would be the right way to do it. And nobody can change that. There's nothing you can do to change individual referees, how they get influenced by certain things. You can't do that. You can't make a law to cover that one.
I think when you...
Because anything that's up to interpretation is down to what is going on in the head of the referee at the time. There's no law is going to change that.
1 second, Frank. What were you going to say?
I was just saying, I think, while inconsistency in refereeing, it's almost par for the course at this point. The one thing you certainly know or expect is that referees are far more strict in European football. So you may be able to get away with something in domestic football that you can't in European football. So it's even more odd that the referees take a far more lenient look this time around.
Frank?
Yeah, I was thinking as a victim, you know. Imagine that the one striker or Xhaka comes to me against me when we play Newcastle against Chelsea, would have come and tried to strangle me. I feel offended. I feel like he's playing with my life. So if I'm not sure that the referee is going to give him a red card, I can tell you, I would be a big fight between Xhaka and I, because I would never let it go. Because it's like you want to survive. If somebody strangles you, you're going to react bad. So it's not good for the young players, because it's not showing the right way to conduct yourself. But on top of it, you feel the danger. If somebody tries to strangle you, immediately you react badly. So if you don't know that the ref's going to give a red card, well, you punch him in the face, because if he tries to strangle you, it becomes a fight. It becomes just a fight and becomes silly things on the field. So the rule is, as soon as you put your hands to the neck of the player, it's a red card, bye-bye.
Should we demonstrate on Kay?
I'm loving it. That was very dramatic, though. Shaka, please do not put both hands on his neck.
I definitely will
not. You really do know not to. Now, Jude Bellingham featured against Leipzig, of course, but we won't be seeing him this weekend against Celta or the following week against Osasuna. This is what he's had to say about what has turned out to be a two-match ban for him. He said, "I didn't say anything offensive. I feel like at times, because I'm new, they want to make an example of me, which I'm cool with. I have to take responsibility for my actions. I think two games is a bit ridiculous." Now, remember after the full-time whistle, when he was denied a goal, what would have been a winning goal for Real Madrid against Valencia, he said to the referee, "It's an effing goal." Well, he didn't say effing, he said the actual word for that. So obviously this was the moment. You can see why tensions were running high because of what happened. Basically, the committee and the referee both feel that it was an aggressive attitude, and he was yelling as well. The rule is, it's not supposed to be offensive, insulting or abusive. That's what would warrant a red card. What did you make of it, Stevie?
Well, I think at the time it was me and Robbo, and we both agreed that if you go at the referee aggressively, regardless of whether you use foul language or not, if you're aggressively in the referee's face, then you're going to get carded. And if it's a red, then you've got to take your punishment. You can't do it. We all know we can't do it. And some players still do it. And sometimes you get away with it, and sometimes you don't. And that situation, he didn't get away with it. And as he said, he's going to have to take his punishment.
Frank, you've been a foreign player in a club. Have you ever had any similar moments like this in your career?
Well, not because of I was insulting the referee, because I got a second yellow card against Leeds, and the player that I didn't touch, RQL, was on the floor, blah blah blah. So I went and I stamped on him, and I said, "Well, I know now why I get a red card." And they wanted to give me like 10 game ban and everything. But it's funny that after I became referee's target, and every game that I was playing, I couldn't contact any player. I was getting a yellow card after a yellow card. And even Gianluca Vialli, as my coach, went publicly and said, "You have to stop that. It's becoming, very unfair. Okay, he did something bad. He apologized. He was punished for that. But you have to stop that." Jude Bellingham has to be careful. Yeah, they're going to target him because he's a fantastic player. And he's also somebody who has to show respect to the referee. He was aggressive when he came to the ref. Maybe, yes, I agree, the F word, and I know that's the first word that I learned, coming to England. But it's not what he meant. but the way that he put himself in front of the referee was very aggressive, and the referee felt offended. So I understand, and I agree with Stevie.
There are definitely nuances of the F word where maybe some foreign referees who don't speak English would not know
what she's talking about.
What he meant.
I'm waiting to see where she's going with it.
But I just wanted to add that. But I actually want to get your thoughts on Jude Bellingham talking about him being made an example of, that he says they're making an example of me.
I in this instance, I don't agree. Listen, I sympathise with Jude Bellingham. On the day, I fully understood why he reacted. And I think he was shown the red card because he just happened to be the right player in the right place, so to speak. A number of Real Madrid players had surrounded the referee. Who knows what they were saying? But I think the referee was just at the point of having enough of the Real Madrid players kind of being in his face and protesting. And then all of a sudden, Jude Bellingham comes running in. And it's just there. And so he just showed up as far as Jude Bellingham is concerned, at exactly the wrong time. Had he been there earlier, I don't think it would have been judged as harshly. But the law is the law. And once you get that red card for comments that you made, you're going to get a 2-game suspension. And I don't think, Jude is entitled to think that it's more harsh and whatever those reasons are. I think once you get that red card for that reason, you're going to get 2 games. And that's just standard across the board. So I don't agree with Jude Bellingham's assessment, though I continue to believe that it was a little bit harsh and it was more just a case of, again, him just arriving at exactly the wrong time.
There's a lot more talk about this situation and that Real Madrid game against Leipzig and everything that's going on at Real Madrid right now on the latest Gab and Jewel show. That has dropped today. Make sure to go and download it wherever you get your podcasts. This is the upcoming La Liga schedule, and no, we will not be seeing Jude Bellingham this weekend as Real Madrid are in action against Celta. Friday brings us Barcelona against Mallorca as well. They're playing Brighton early this weekend. Cadiz against Atleti also on the board, and the match day wraps up with Almeria trying to get a win this season against Sevilla.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match. With Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Bayer Leverkusen's unbeaten run almost came to an end against Karabag in the Europa League, but even though they went 2 goals down, they managed to get 2 back, and it means it is 35 games without a single loss in any competition for Xabi Alonso's men. Daniele De Rossi's Roma are also absolutely flying, beating Brighton 4-0 in the Europa League. It's 10 games, only 1 loss in that time, and that came against Inter. They are flying under Daniele De Rossi, but De Roma make Shaka's power rankings.
3 Italian teams in the power rankings this week.
Inter
up 1, Leverkusen dropped 2 because of a draw with Karabag. Everybody just kind of adjusts around them. Arsenal up 2 themselves. And then Bologna, who put together an incredible run, won their last 7. They sneak in a 10. Galatasaray back in. And as you say, okay, Roma certainly has been the story in the last 10 games under Daniele De Rossi, and fully deserving to be in at number 8. Real Madrid are down one after, well, obviously, after drawing with Leipzig as they did.
Galatasaray, why are they?
Galatasaray are running away with things in Turkish football.
Are they?
Yes.
I bow to your superior.
Yeah, just trust me when I say that.
Stevie, you were delighted last week. You let it all go because you saw who was number one.
And he's done it again this year. I mean, he's learning from his previous mistakes and days and years gone past.
To just
now,
put Liverpool number
now
one.
Now we're seeing the consistent tracker of putting together the power rankings.
We see where they are on Monday. If they're there on Monday, that's big.
As you said earlier, Shaq, learning from your mistakes. Teams learn from the mistakes, and you've done exactly that.
That's right, Stephen.
Frank, do you like Shaka's power rankings this week?
Well, I'm always, you know, questioning the fact that there is kind of an invisibility of the League One with Shaka. Well, I guess he doesn't have the right channel for that, so it's excusable for that. But I like the fact that, you know, I talked about Inter being maybe one of the favorites of Champions League. They put them second, so it's fair. I like it. I like to see new clubs coming in, and I think Shaka always tried to be fair. So just one advice. Don't forget that there is, in France, a championship.
Yeah, but you see, but PSG are the likely candidates. PSG drew their last two league games. And while PSG, I admit I judge PSG a little bit harshly because they've just broken my heart far too many times. They can't be drawing in League One and hoping to sneak in here. Not certainly not drawing twice back to back.
You can't argue with knowledge, can you? I mean, straight off the bat.
Or the algorithm.
Yeah, it's just science.
And I would suggest science. The reason PSG are not in it is because he does have the right channel.
I wondered if the algorithm had a heart.
No, it's all science, Kay. It's all science.
All science, basically.
It's all science.
Frank, Shaka and Stevie will be answering your questions on the latest edition of Extra Time. Be sure to go and check that out every single day over on our YouTube channel. So Liverpool 25-1 to win the quadruple, one down, just three more to go when it comes to that quest. We actually got a chance to speak to John Oliver, the British-American comedian and host, the creator of the Last Week Tonight show on HBO. He is, of course, a big Liverpool fan as well. So ahead of the big game, we asked him his all-time Liverpool 11.
Starting at the back, is my heart and my head, right? My head says Alisson's the best goalkeeper that Liverpool have ever had. He can do everything. My heart is saying Bruce Grobbelaar because he was just chaos incarnate. It's like Darwin Núñez as a goalkeeper. So I'm going to have Grobbelaar as a reserve, right? And then I'm putting Alisson ahead of him. Centre-backs, Alan Hansen, just absolute syrup footballer. Next to him, I think you're doing Virgil van Dijk. Just two absolute colossus centre-backs there. Right back, it's hard to look past Trent. He's completely changed the role. On the left, I've always had a soft spot for John Arne Riise. Absolute thunderbolt of a left foot. Middle of the park, this will surprise no one, Stevie G. Okay, it feels like that's a non-negotiable. Xabi Alonso, Rolls-Royce of a footballer, or whatever the Spanish version of a Rolls-Royce is. I'm going to go with a three-man midfield. I'll come back to that. Up front, Mo, Ian Rush. Go back to the midfield. I'm putting Kenny Dalglish in there. Final one, a certain window of Philip Coutinho I would put in there. That's right, and then I've got Neil Ruddock on the bench. Just in case anyone gets kicked, you say, do you really want us to bring him on? We don't want that. You don't want that. But Neil is here.
So, well, Stevie, you didn't make his 11, but do you like his 11?
I wouldn't have Coutinho in it.
I was thinking the same thing.
Yeah. And you have to find a place for Graham Souness. I don't see how you can't have Graham Souness in it. As good a player as Xabi Alonso was, I think you've got Gerrard and yeah, I don't know whether I would have Xabi Alonso in it, to be honest with you.
What?
I wouldn't have Coutinho in it, and I don't think I would have Alonso in it. I'd have Souness in it before Xabi Alonso.
Why doesn't John Oliver like you?
And why does John Barnes not get him?
I was thinking John Barnes. Yeah. But what, Mike, I'm really concerned. What have you done to John Oliver? What have you done?
Who?
Just you! Just
me.
Get ignored.
Yeah. And when he said Stevie, I thought we were.
Oh, I thought, here we go. You could stick Stevie Nick on the right or the left. He's just picking everybody.
He got close. He put a ginger in.
Even Neil Ruddock got mentioned.
I heard that Frank's face was a picture. Were you disgusted at these picks, Frank?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the guy forgot history. History is Steve Nichols, for sure. He has to be there. And it's not because he's one of my colleagues. He has to be there. He's legend. And if you don't forget Graham Souness and Kevin Keegan, you forgot everything. Mm. That's history. In the 70s, I saw Kevin Keegan, one of the best on the left side. And when I see Coutinho, I'm very, very sorry. But that you forgot history. So Graham Souness, Kevin Keegan and Steve Nichols, they have to be in it for sure.
Now, hang on a minute. Let's give him a chance to redeem himself, because we did ask him specifically about Stevie Nichols, and this is what he had to say.
Stevie Nichols was playing the first game that I ever went to. I think he was playing then. I was 8 years old. I think he played Liverpool against Aston Villa. He would know this. I think it was 2-2. Paul Walsh scored. I'm pretty sure he was playing that day. I have nothing but positive memories about Stevie Nichols, especially when it comes to the FA Cup. The greatest FA Cup final of my childhood was 1986. I was 9 years old then. That was when Liverpool won the double, played Everton in the Cup final. It was like the whole city moved to Wembley that day. There was a famous footage, I think. Do you remember this? There was a guy, they climbed up on the roof. There was a few fans that got onto the roof of Wembley and were watching from there. Really, objectively dangerous. Nothing not dangerous about that. It was always tied up as, look, this is the romance of the cup. So, that Stevie Nichols was playing in that game as well. That I think we went 1-0 down. Gary Lineker, I think, scored. And then Ian Rush scored one goal. As a kid, I always loved it. He put it right in the corner and it hit the camera in the corner of the goal and it knocked it. And I used to, in my back garden, put like a camera, like my dad's camera, and just try and hit it with the ball until my dad said, come on, quote him, what the f*** are you doing with my camera? And that was the end of it.
Bella.
It didn't give me enough about you there, Stevie. I would have liked to have heard a little bit more. Do you remember the games that he's talking about? Obviously, the final, you will.
Aye, I remember every single thing he's talking about.
Villa game?
There was actually another one. See the one you saw the guy in the roof? There's another one that same day. The turret at Wembley, where the front, where the big door is, mm-hmm. where the bus drives through. So there's like a turret and there's a gap about 30 foot up. And what they were doing, they were hanging people out. So the guy was holding on to one guy. He was hanging out and he was pulling other people up and we're pulling them up through the turret. I mean, one slap and you're...
Good Lord.
Thanks for coming.
Oh, my Good goodness. Lord. Oh, my goodness. Happy memories.
Big
people
sense.
Sat on rooftops and what have you. Obviously, FA Cup.
I'd have you in my team, right Stephen.
Thank you, Shaq.
Yeah, I'd have you in my team. No bother as well, Stevie Nichols. Quarterfinal schedule looks like this. All of these games are available on ESPN Plus, and Liverpool are in action against Manchester United March 17th, 11 a.m. Eastern.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
We all know breakfast is an important part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any. You know what happens? You grab a cup of coffee and skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, and waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Extra time is coming up. Frank will be joining us to answer your questions. Stick around.
I didn't say that. That was very close.
Yeah, we are still live, Stevie.
Sorry?
Sticking up for youngsters there. Just a little reminder. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Frank Leboeuf is joining us, Stevie. You've heard him already.
For the goalkeeper.
Yeah, cheers, Frankie. Yeah.
That's for the goalkeeper. Yeah, well done.
Yeah, it's been a tough, been a good day, but then, you know, we've had some moments.
Yes, yeah, I know.
We've had some moments.
Yeah, but no VAR here.
No, so we're all right.
Stevie, don't want to get you into trouble with the echo, so just wink into the camera if you're ready to cash in on Alisson and move forward with Kelleher.
Oh. Which camera, that one? Really, number two.
He's frozen.
Wow.
There's your answer.
Poker face.
Yeah.
There you go. See how you smell that?
Oh, I like that one. All right, Tuchel has walked out of his last three jobs due to differences with the board or his bosses, Frank. Is that something any new club looking to hire him will be wary of? Last night, ESPN FC panellists were advocating Tuchel to be the next United manager under their current circumstances.
Yeah, tricky position from the panelists, and I don't know. I don't know. Yeah, I will be the chairman of a club. You know, I will wonder if it's a good decision. I will talk to him first to know exactly what he wants and how to settle everything down, because you know what, you can talk after. When it's too late, it's too late, you know. So you push everything on the up front, and then after you ask him to not say anything if he disagree with what he said before. But yeah, considering what happens before and the three times before, if he comes to Manchester United with the atmosphere that you can find in the dressing room, could be tricky.
I'm not so sure. And I tell you what, I think Thomas Tuchel as a manager, and while yes, you could look at his last three jobs, you could also say at all those clubs, something's been wrong. Something's been wrong about the culture or the ownership, whatever it is. PSG, for all their good players and all their good managers, they still have not delivered on their biggest prize. Chelsea has been an you see what's happening ever since Boehly took over. I don't put that on Thomas Tuchel. And then similarly, Bayern has been an absolute mess for the last 18 months, which has seen Salihamidzic, Kahn all leave. And it's FC Hollywood, as Jan always puts it. Now, the challenge to that is you could quite easily make the argument that Manchester United isn't that much better. Maybe Sir Jim Ratcliffe comes in and adds some stability and sense to that board, and Tuchel is able to operate well. But to the question, in his previous three jobs that he's left, I don't hold him fully accountable for all this.
Next, Solskjaer said in a recent interview that at United, certain players told him that they were not comfortable being captain in certain matches. Does that say more about the makeup of the United dressing room or the lack of confidence of the specific player themselves, Stevie?
It tells you the character of the players.
Yeah.
And the worst thing about the whole situation is that 99 times out of 100, the manager is asking an experienced player to be captain. He's not going to some rookie who doesn't even shave any yet, you know what I mean? He's not. He's talking to experienced guys. A team like Man United has experienced captains. And if you've got not just one, but multiple players not interested, I think that tells you more about the character of the players that they're signing than anything else.
It was a straight yes from you and Frank.
Yeah, and it's so weird. Now, first of all, I don't understand why you have to be asking players to be captain, right? I thought you had your captain, or you know who's kind of second and third in command, so be it. But I've often said on here, players have almost sometimes fatal self-belief. Every player at that level I know. If I'm injured and you ask me to play, I'll give it a go. You know, I'm not feeling well and you ask me to play, I'll give it a go. You want me to be captain, I'll give it a go. I cannot think of anybody in any dressing room I've been in that somebody comes to them and says, you want to be captain for the day? And they say, I'm not sure about this. I have never. I cannot think of a single person in far smaller clubs than Manchester United. I cannot think of a single person who would opt out.
The couple of times I was captain at Liverpool, the first thing I did was smile. I wanted to be the captain. It's like, what?
Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, why would you not? It makes Shaka said.
I don't care.
It makes no sense whatsoever. What's wrong with you?
Well, maybe Frank, they saw it more of a burden than an honour.
Yeah, but that's the problem. It is an honour. It's a pride. I mean, especially when you play for Manchester United and you have the possibility of being the captain, you make history. I mean, that's crazy. I've been captain to every club that I played for. At Chelsea, the real captain was Dennis Wiseman. Once, you know, a couple of times, they asked me to be the captain, to be the vice captain. How could I say no to that, again, honour? That's impossible. You have to accept that. It's natural. Like Stevie and Shaka said, you would never think no. It's impossible. And I don't understand. It's a lack of character. It's a lack of respect, in a way, for the club that you play for. You don't understand the power of and the pleasure of being a captain of a team and the what you get from that, the responsibility. It's fantastic.
Shaka, is it too early to ask if Newcastle have it in them to beat this in-form Man City in the FA Cup this season?
I can't see it. I can't see it. Not in seasons in previous two seasons. I think United would have given City a good run. I at least put up a fist. But it's just and there are reasons for it. But this season, just Newcastle aren't playing with the kind of confidence, aren't playing with the kind of resolve. And certainly right now, you look at this version of Manchester City, it's difficult to see a Newcastle win.
It's not happening. This is from my burner account. With the Women's Gold Cup semi-final between Canada and USA played essentially underwater last night, have you ever had to play a match in similar conditions, Stevie?
Yeah, not with water, though.
I mean, you were shocked when you saw the images there, weren't you?
Yeah, that's embarrassing. I mean, actually, you know, It demeans the competition when you're asking players to play it on a surface like that. I mean, come on, it's just not on. But yes, it was snow though, not water. And it was in East Germany for Scotland under 21s, and it was absolutely impossible. It was the same thing when you try to kick it through water. The ball gathers snow and stops. It's exactly the same thing. Now, we were more than happy to play the game because this was before the Iron Curtain. So nobody wanted to come back to East Germany and play again. So we were more than happy to play. But yeah, East Germany, Scotland under 21s.
They didn't have a nice hotel.
I think I told you we got followed. So a guy called Roy Aitken, Newcastle captain. I said to him, hey, let's go and see if we can get some toys for the kids. So he went, aye, okay. So went out, and we're walking around, couldn't find a toy shop. For love nor money. And we're walking around and Roy went to me and said, have you noticed anything? And I'm like, what are you talking about? He goes, well, number one, nobody's speaking. So we're walking down the street and nobody was speaking. Like, just normal people going
about. Like, nine speaking to each other?
No. Me and Roy were the only two people that were talking. Nobody else was talking. And he said, number two, he said, have you noticed the two guys following us? I'm like, what are you talking about? He goes, these two, they said, since we left the hotel. I was like, anyway, we found a shop that had wooden stuff that sort of looked like kid stuff. But we just went like that. Nah, good. Back to the hotel.
You should have tried running away. You should have tried running away from the guys who were following you. That'd have been fun.
Yeah. Well, he wouldn't have caught me. They wouldn't have caught me then.
No, not then, Stevie.
They'd have caught Roy. Yeah, they'd have caught Roy. Yeah. See you, Roy.
Oliver.
I'm not talking to you anymore now. All right, Shekhar, what about the conditions you've had to play in?
Not that bad. I mean, I've played in some bad conditions, as anybody in the Caribbean will tell you. Rain can come down, and then 20 minutes later, you have no idea that it just rained. So sometimes you catch it at the wrong time and you play in some bad conditions. But that was awful. And I think that was awful on a number of levels. This is a CONCACAF semi-final. This is a semi-final. I mean, it had absolutely no right going ahead. And I understand the complaints, but it's down to the referee. That's the referee's decision. CONCACAF should not get involved in that decision. Referee should see sense to it. Because I'm with Steve, that detracts from the competition. It really does.
Yeah. I signed a guy called Michael Parkhurst for the refs. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons I signed him, and a big reason I signed him, was his team were playing in those conditions. It was NCAAs, and they had to play the game. They could not, time constraints, the whole thing. And one of the reasons I signed him was because I was looking for a smart centre-back who could sweep up and who was clever and the whole thing. And they were playing in that type of field with the water, and the ball wouldn't roll. And there was 21 other people on that field, and every single one of them was trying to roll it and trying to pass it and kept doing the same thing. And this one guy was just lifting it out the water, getting his head up, lifting it out the water, just little. And I'm like, you know what, this guy's got some brain. And then I signed him in the draft. Michael Parkhurst.
Yeah, he's actually got some good stories about you. He told one of my friends.
Oh, he did?
What a player he turned out for, yeah.
He was a great player, aye.
Yep. Said what all the players who played under you always have funny stories about what it was like playing under you. So I'm sure he'll be happy.
That's no surprise. That's no surprise. Yep, we just walk around the halls here with Steve, exactly. And we have a great story.
Frank, what's the worst conditions you've played in?
In two games, one in Strasbourg in League One, we played on a frozen pitch. The field wasn't heated. And the worst is that it was a sunny day, but it was like minus 10, so let's say 20 degrees Fahrenheit. And it was completely frozen, but on the vertical way, half of the pitch. One was under the sun, so it was soft. The other half was very, very frozen, so it was impossible to run. It was crazy. And the second one is in, I think it was Europa League with Chelsea. We played in Tromsø in Norway, and it was snowing so much that we had to stop the game three times in the second half because we couldn't see the lines anymore. And we should not have played. I mean, it was impossible to play. We lost. I think Gianluca Vialli scored two goals to make us lose 3-2 on the first leg, and we won 7-0 or 7-1 the second leg. So it was good.
It's all right in the end. All's well that ends well.
I've got one for you in the old days.
Go on then.
What they used to do when the pitches were frozen, they used to put straw on it. And for some reason, if they put straw on it, they thought that would do the trick. We played York City, who were in the third division at the time, in the FA Cup, and we were Liverpool, and we were European champions. And there was no way they weren't playing the game, because obviously it gave them an advantage. And what they did was put straw, and then before the game, we were running around, bits of straw getting entangled in your boots and shoes and everything. Because obviously when they cleared all the straw off, number one, it was rock hard, and two, they never got all the straw off.
Did it end in a one-all straw?
Nil-nil.
Oh, God.
Nil-nil straw.
All right, sorry.
Jesus.
We'll end it there, shall we?
It's getting worse. Kids, it's getting worse.
Sorry.
Goodness.
That's a straw deal.
That's a straw that broke the back.
Two of you. Let's go home. Please, take me home.